Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects by Fidelity Investments Canada, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Portfolio manager Darren Lekkerkerker is back for another Fidelity Connects podcast, joining host Pamela Ritchie to discuss his portfolio positioning for his fund, Fidelity North American Equity Class, entering into 2021. Also, Darren discusses where he is finding opportunities and how he is balancing U.S. and Canadian equity markets. In addition to Fidelity North American Equity Class, Darren manages Fidelity Global Natural Resources Fund with Joe Overdevest, and is Equity's sub-portfolio manager on Fidelity Canadian Balanced Fund and Fidelity Canadian Asset Allocation Fund. Darren is bullish on Canada and on commodities, and is optimistic on 2021 as we're presented with low rates, fiscal stimulus, and the COVID-19 vaccine. Darren also shares what the recent U.S. election means for his investment thesis, and today's podcast was recorded on January 5th, 2021, the day of the Georgia runoff election in the U.S. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Darren, welcome. Great to see you.
Hi, Pamela. It's great to be here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. We can start actually with the election. It's a bit of an all eyes on this situation. It has to do with the Senate. What does it mean for the markets one way or the other, and really for your investment thesis?
Yeah, sure. So just so that everyone understands what it is right. So right now with the election in November, the Democrats will control the White House and the Congress, but the Republicans currently have a slight edge in the Senate, with two seats doing a runoff election today in Georgia, the state of Georgia, so it's very topical. If they were both to flip from Republican to Democrats, then the Democrats would also control the Senate. And so it's very important, Pamela, because it means that in terms of the Democrats and future and President-elect Biden's ability to control policy and legislation, that would allow them to do so. I think if they were to win, I think that they would likely, you would see a bigger stimulus from past, which would, I think, certainly benefit the economy. In terms of the impact on the markets, it's always hard to know in advance. The market doesn't always follow the script that Wall Street thinks it will. But what I think that the market liked the divided government of both the Democrats and Republicans following the last election. And so you may see a little bit of pressure on the market. One policy that investors would be a little bit afraid of would be the government raising taxes on corporates and possibly capital gains. So that could be a little bit of pressure for the market. However, I think that may be a little bit offset by a greater stimulus. And so I think what you could also see is you could see a lot of rotation in terms of sectors moving. And I think it would be towards more value-oriented sectors. People may worry a little bit more about regulation on big cap technology as well. So that's what I think could happen here.
It's interesting. You know, let's talk about sectors that have been beaten down a little bit. And you know, I'm going to pick on oil right now because there's been an announcement that's come out minutes ago, basically, that the OPEC discussions, OPEC plus discussions, we see Saudi Arabia proposing cutting, it doing its own cutting. Anyway, the price of oil is jumping. I know this is an area that obviously you follow closely. Let's talk about sort of this rotation to value, whether oil fits into it or not for you. Give us your broad thoughts on it.
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to stick with what I said last year when we had these discussions. And that is, in terms of commodities, I invest with geological scarcity, and where I see that is more in the material sector as opposed to energy. And I think if you look at commodities like copper, it's much more geologically scarce than oil, where you have a lot of spare capacity. But since oil's topical, let's talk about it. And you know, the one thing that I think is actually super interesting and broadly actually in commodities is you've actually had this really big, like everyone's focused on the NASDAQ bull market, but you actually had a really big bull market run in commodities from the sort of, they got absolutely killed, right, in March, April, but from the lows, you've had a really big run. And so in terms of energy, I think it's interesting. But as you mentioned, right, there's a lot of spare capacity, and that, and what's going on today is because of a headline that says that Saudi Arabia may reduce capacity. And what's going on is you've got this OPEC plus, and the plus refers to Russia. So you've got this agreement between OPEC and Russia to restrict supply from the market, because right now we've got limited mobility and demand is lower than the normalized amount pre-COVID when we were all driving. And so the agreement called for an increase in capacity, and they've been negotiating, and it's been rumored that the Russians actually want to stick to the agreement and increase capacity so they can pump more volume and get more revenue, whereas the Saudis want to hold back because they don't want to collapse the price. And so it's unclear, like, is this just a negotiation or what's exactly going to happen? The market is taking it favorably, and the looks like WTI is up 4% off this. But like, just broadly, more just into thoughts on energy. So I think energy could have a decent year this year as you have some recovery in mobility and demand. And I think the stocks are cheap. I think longer term, it's a little more mixed. I worry about the sustainability of longer term demand as you see a rise in the pervasiveness of electric vehicles, what that could have on demand. I also worry about the multiples on these energy companies as ESG investing becomes really important and they have capital restricted to them. I also think that they're getting capital restricted to them from the banks too. I know that the banks think about this in terms of their own ESG ratings. Where I am quite favorable is on the materials commodities. I've talked about copper in the past. I still like copper. I think copper is geologically scarce. So demand was really strong last year as China actually had a strong economy. They recovered very quickly from COVID. Supply is very restricted from copper. There's no large mines slated to come on in terms of copper. And I think you could see a recovery in demand from the rest of the world. And I think sentiment is positive as there is some demand coming from electric vehicles that do require a lot of copper, but also in terms of bolstering the grid. If we're all going to charge our electric vehicles at the same time, when you come home from work, you will need some demand there. So I think copper has looked good. We've seen a rally there, and that's an area where I do have some holdings, and it has benefited my funds.
Very interesting. Well, you know, let's just talk about some of the funds and the ideas that obviously you've been playing out in your funds. I do want you to sum up what you've been doing over the course of 2020.
So in terms of 2020, I mean, look, in terms of the markets and investing, obviously it was a fascinating year in terms of what happened and certainly the way that it turned out. And so I think for me, I think, you know, one, I have an investment style where I focus on investing in high quality companies. And I would define that as companies that have a competitive advantage and as a result, generate superior returns on capital. And I think that really showed its sort of like robustness last year. And so my largest holding was Microsoft in the North American Equity Fund. And some of the other, I think my largest holding or one of my largest holdings in the Canadian Balance Fund was CP Rail, which is also a large holding. And so like these high quality companies are very different. One's a software company, but look, it really benefited from work from home. And it really showed the resiliency there. And I think it's set up really well. I continue to own it. And then CP Rail actually had increased their profits, right? I mean, like, and it's also like a monopoly or oligopoly type of business. Something else that I would talk about last year that was more tactical was in March, April, when the market was killed and people thought we were going to have a deep consumer recession. I was able to add a lot in consumer discretionary names to the funds. And so one area was restaurants and retail. They were left for dead. And I was looking for restaurants and retailers that would have strong demand in a work from home environment and that would benefit from an omni-channel, like a strong e-commerce, or in the case of restaurants, takeout or delivery strategy, and benefit post-COVID with like less competition, better access to key retail sites, And so on and so forth. And then I think one other area that I think is really interesting and super topical today, and we talked about it multiple times last year, was ESG investing, but also a focus on stocks, environmental stocks. And so I last year invested in a few areas in terms of renewable power, in terms of green hydrogen, in terms of solar energy. I still have investments in all these areas. I have taken some profits. I mean, it did, you know, much better than I would have thought. Last year, I think the stocks are a little expensive, and so it's still an area I'm really looking at. I'm trying to find some better value there. But I think, look, what drove these stocks, and I think what can continue is society's focusing more on decarbonization. Biden winning the presidential election, and the Dems focusing more on sort of a green. And then I think I would say lastly, ESG and a lot of capital coming into the space.
If you think markets are looking fully priced, a little overvalued, you can attach to it any of these monikers. But you know, do you think things are getting a little bit lofty here? And you know, what is your exit strategy? Just so investors understand, like how do you approach this if you need to?
Yeah, right. So look, we certainly had a very nice and fun Santa Claus rally post the election into year end. Having said that, I'm still optimistic on this year. Look, I think that you've got really low rates. You've got fiscal stimulus coming. You've got a vaccine coming, which I think could potentially release some animal spirits in terms of consumers that have been able to maintain or actually improve their balance sheets during this, and probably some desire for pent-up spending. So I find consumer discretionary a very interesting area. People talk a lot about how expensive it is, the market is, but when you look at the large caps, like look, my largest holding is Microsoft. I think it's a little bit more than 30 times forward earnings. It was double that, you know, in the sort of tech bubble. So I think like in terms of, I think most areas of the market, you can find reasonable valuations. I think there are some areas of the market which are certainly very expensive, but overall, I would say I'm positive. And then you mentioned exit strategy. And from that, I think you mean like, when do I sell a stock? And certainly that's very important. So for me, you know, I sell a stock typically whenever I buy a stock, I have a short and concise investment thesis. If I find that thesis is no longer valid, or I find a company that I prefer, I would buy that. Or if I think it's just done so well that thesis it's played out, we've made some money, it's time to take some profits and move on and find better opportunities. But and as I mentioned to you last year, it's certainly an area that I'm trying to be a little more active. I think I use the word ruthless on, and that's, you know, focus for me on my investment process.
You know, we've touched on oil, we've touched on materials broadly, different areas of materials, alternative energy. I think you mentioned financials more in sort of cost of capital for oil companies and so on. But these are all pretty Canadian stories. Are you bullish on Canada? How bullish are you on Canada? And how does that fit with your mandate for North American investing?
I am bullish on Canada. I think Canada hasn't done anything for, you know, several years, and certainly underperformed the U.S. by quite a bit. I think in the short term, I think in a reopening of the economy, I think Canada does well, in part because it's more cyclical, right? It has more exposure to some of these areas like materials, energy, financial. It also has a lot of exposure to consumer discretionary that could do really well. I also think that the currency, the Canadian dollar, I mean, I'm not going to get over my skis and try to predict currency returns going forward, but I think that, I think there's a lot of people, a lot of negative sentiment on the US dollar. I think that the US dollar tends to be less cyclical than the Canadian dollar, in part because the economy is less cyclical. So I think you could see the Canadian dollar and certain areas of the Canadian economy doing well. So yeah, I think I'm bullish on Canada, certainly in the short term in a recovery trade.
I want to ask you about financial data. I mean, big data is a huge topic, but sort of zeroing in on financial data includes big data as well. But there's been, I don't know, overused sayings like data is the new oil and so on. Tell us how you look at financial data companies and, you know, the theme generally.
Yeah. So It's something we talked about last year, right? The information services group or the companies that benefit from selling data. And so I find it a really fascinating group because of the growing importance and value of data. And so I think this group did pretty good last year, but it didn't shoot the lights out. And so I still like it. And so I think that for some of the companies I own, like clearly their offerings to customers have grown in importance. We're seeing increased customer engagement. Some of these companies were able to improve their cost structure and profitability profile going forward as a result of COVID. And so I still think that there's good opportunities here, and I continue to own these stocks.
There's a bunch of questions rolling in here. Let me get to a couple of them. So this is a very much a global macro story, but you know, the geopolitical issue, the globe, we see them in headlines, certainly Iran yesterday, this investor's writing in, you know, how does that affect the way that you look at markets right now? Do you add in a layer of sort of risk tolerance, or do you change that on some level? How do you look at the geopolitical, if at all?
Yeah, it's certainly really interesting. I actually think that when we have President-elect Biden in office, you may actually have a little bit less political risk than the current administration. Clearly, they have very different styles as presidents. And I think you may get a little bit of an olive branch towards China, which would be, I think, good for China, would be good for those commodities which China is short and buys, which include copper, oil, and corn. It's something that I'm interested in, and it actually makes me a little more bullish on commodities.
Let's pick up on corn. Go to agriculture. This is an area that you like, broadly speaking. Is corn sort of one of the main soft commodities you're looking at? Is it what is the agricultural outlook for the next little while?
Kupama, I was actually the potash analyst in the big sort of fertilizer and agriculture boom in the mid-2000s, and so I have some fond memories here. But I've like basically ignored it since 2012 after BHP unsuccessfully bid to buy potash. I basically ignored it, and we've actually had a really soft agricultural economy. I actually have two cousins that are grain farmers, so I keep close tabs on this. But look, corn price is back, and I think corn prices is strong, and other grain prices are strong, and I think that's resulting in a strong outlook for the agricultural economy. It is an area that I'm currently invested in, and I'm finding attractive stocks. And one thing I'll point out is stocks do really well when conditions go from like bad to okay, so much better than when conditions go from good to great or great to slightly better than great. And I think we're seeing that in agriculture. I think the economy looks strong. I think there's opportunities in fertilizers, crop chemicals, and some other areas as well.
That's absolutely fascinating. When you look at gold, which is one of the areas that we have not discussed. I mean, gold coins were used by the Romans. This is not a new trend. We'll just add our 2 cents to it. But I mean, where does it fit for you, if it does at all? It's had some interesting moves through the last year. Some people will say Bitcoin needs to be the new gold. I don't know how you look at it. Where does gold fit?
So I think Bitcoin and gold are similar in that they're currency alternatives. Obviously, gold has like a multi-thousand year history, and Bitcoin, I think, was invented or came around in 2009. So it's a little shorter history. Bitcoin also has more of a secular growth, whereas gold does not. And so maybe Bitcoin is stealing a little from gold over time in that regard. But I think you could think of these things as a portfolio hedge that should do well when other financial assets are not, in which case, like, you know, inflation, if we were to have breakaway inflation, and you know, that's not my base case in the near term, but clearly we're having like a massive increase in the money supply and stimulus, so that's a worry. So you know, I do own some gold. I think that if the US dollar keeps going down, and if you see low rates in the US as well as a bigger budget deficit, it's possible that the US dollar gets debased. I think gold could do well. I prefer industrial commodities like copper, just in terms of the reopening. I think that you could see demand increase more there. So I do own some gold, but I would prefer industrial commodities.
There's a question rolling in here from one of the investors. Darren, are business owners broadly spending more or less money in the past year to improve their businesses given the uncertainty surrounding COVID-19?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that depends by end market and that depends by function. I think in terms of spending on like a digital strategy or an omni-channel strategy in order for like, for example, like a retailer to be able to serve us while people are, you know, stores are closed or people just don't want to go in stores, they're spending a ton of money there, right? And so I think it's all about thinking like where are they spending and you know who's got the best product or service, and that's where so we're trying to invest. And so, you know, I mentioned Microsoft's my biggest position. And so I think Microsoft, you know, it's been really well positioned there, right? It's really certainly benefited. I think early on, Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, said, we've seen a pull forward in 2 years of digital transformation by businesses in terms of into the past 2 months. And so, you know, maybe that's even expanded to beyond 2 years since then.
It's fascinating. You mentioned a bit about regulation, technology, kind of off the top. You sort of mentioned what else do we need to know about that? I mean, it's some will say the lid is taken off Pandora's box. Others say that's overdone. How much do you watch that?
I watch it. I think it matters most for Facebook and Google, which I don't own in my funds. But I think it does matter for some of the other companies like Amazon and Apple. But I think like, look, I think we're talking about it all the time. So I think to a certain degree, it's priced into the stocks. And I also think that this is not something that impacts consumers in a negative way, and at least in terms of price, right? Like it's not something where through a monopoly, they're able to raise prices. It's actually somewhat benefiting consumers. It's more maybe hurting the business competition ecosystem. And so that's hard to know. And then is the US going to want to pull back or slow down their global champions? I doubt it. I doubt it. But
Interesting.
will the EU? Probably yes. So that's probably going to be some issue between the US and the EU. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting discussion. And in terms of the stocks that I own, it's yeah, it is something I worry about, but I do think to a fair degree it's priced in.
You own your own fund, or you're one of the biggest shareholders, is that right? I think you told us that last time. Is that right?
I am, yeah. I'm the largest shareholder of the Fidelity North American Equity Fund. And like, look, for me, it's just a good way for me to save money and compound my money over time. And I typically add to it as I did last year every year. So yeah, I like to say that because like, look, one of the things like when people ask me, how do I invest? I ask one of the key points is management. And I say, okay, like, look at where a CEO has their money. Are they invested in their company? How do they earn their bonus? And if you were to ask me all those questions, like, look, I own the fund, a lot of it. It's my most meaningful financial investment that I have in life. And then two, in terms of how I'm paid, you know, my compensation, it's by outperforming the benchmark or outperforming the other fund. So yeah, it's something that I think that aligns the uniholders of the fund with me personally, or me with the uniholders, actually the other way.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the fun side of perhaps travel. Again, we've talked a bit about snap back trades and so on, but I do want to get into actual travel, entertainment, leisure, how it might be different or how it might be exactly the same, and we can't wait to get back to it. What do you do with those thoughts? How do you invest?
Yeah, I think this is a super interesting area. And I mentioned to you just before the show started that my family has booked a vacation to a beach resort in very early. We've got young kids, so we're definitely looking forward to that in early 2022. And so I think a lot of people are thinking about that. And so, here's how I'm thinking about it. Here's the framework. So one, what's priced in? Because a lot of these stocks had a big run and post the vaccine announcement in mid-November. So what's priced in and where's the opportunity? Two, differentiation between leisure travel, which I think will come back really strongly. I think everyone's going to want a vacation when this is over, right? I know I do. And then, what kind of pricing? Like maybe they're probably going to increase the prices. And like, frankly, they'll pay it because I just want to go so bad, versus business travel, where I do think it'll come back, but I think it'll come back a little slower.
When you
So
just said
that's,
that you know you would pay it, and probably a lot of people who want to go on vacation would
yeah.
pay it, what does that mean for actual prices that a, you know an airline can charge?
Well, so I think with resorts and hotels, I think you'll, and alternative accommodations, like things like Airbnb or VRBO, I think you'll definitely see it because that skews more towards leisure travel. I think on the airlines and some of the more sort of business oriented hotels, you have to think about like, well, what happens with business travel? And with airlines, clearly there's like a lot of capacity offline. I think it will come back online like over time. The other thing you need to think about with airlines in particular is how much cash did they burn? So how much shares did they issue? How much is their debt higher? You can't just look at the share price because there's more shares and more debt. I would look at the enterprise value, which is the total value of the company now versus then. But I mean, look, clearly I think that from a currently very depressed state, business will get a lot better.
Right. Darren Leckerkirker, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Happy New Year, and thank you for spending time here.
Hey, I'm really excited. It's a new year. I just want to thank everyone that listened to it. And, you know, I really thank you, everyone from sincerely everyone that's invested in my funds. I really appreciate it. And I'm certainly, really engaged and focused. And Pamela, hey, thank you. Let's hope 2021 is a great year. And let's hope that, you know, at the end of the year, like things are normalized and maybe we'll do one of these in person or something.
More to come in 2021. Darren Leckerkirker, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts, and don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thank you. See you again.